back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to the latest edition of the MVP Cast with myself, Mark Woods. My guest is fresh from celebrating a championship victory last weekend. An almost perfect season. 19 games, 19 wins, enough to give Sevenoaks Suns their second consecutive Women's British Basketball League title. And let's talk to arguably the fulcrum of that squad, Kat Carr. Welcome to the MVP Cast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
I mean, you clinched the title on Saturday. You win at Sheffield Hatters. What's the celebration afterwards?
You know, we were really excited. I think since we lost to them in the cup final in January, we were really focused and we were really looking forward to playing them again. We knew that Sheffield and Leicester were close behind us in the race, so we knew that we needed to solidify our spot up top by winning. And I think that beating Sheffield in Sheffield just added the icing on the cake for us. So, I mean, afterwards we were really excited because, you know, after that cup final, it was really hard for us to bounce back, not necessarily against other teams, but, you know, just mentally and fit, like, you know, having that morale within our team of bouncing back from a tough loss like that. So, yeah, the celebrations were great. We were really, really excited, and we were just happy to be able to get it done sooner rather than later.
And what is the celebration? Does Len get out his credit cards? Len Bush, your coach, and so treat everyone to, like, you know, big McDonald's on the motorway back, or what's it consist of? Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, we had a game the very following day, so our celebrations were limited. But we did get to all spend the night together and you know, maybe have one or two celebratory drinks, but nothing too crazy because, like I said, we had a game the next day. So, but yeah, we just enjoyed each other's company. And, you know, I think soon we'll be able to celebrate as a team, have a proper, you know, British style celebration.
Crazy night out that no one remembers the next day.
Yeah, something like that. Maybe not too crazy, but something like that, yeah.
I mean, you've been part of this process at Sevenoaks and kind of building this to the point now. You're back-to-back league champions. Of course, you were MVP of the league last season. What's it been like to kind of see this grow and grow and grow to the point now that you were the country's top team?
It's actually, yeah, it's when I think about it back to when I first came here in 2013, I want to say, because I played for 1 year at Northumbria, then I was home for a year, and then I came to Sevenoaks like in the mid season of that season. And looking at how the club was then to how it is now, and just seeing the growth of the basketball in this country, especially the women's side, it's been amazing. So, I mean, looking back at when I first started and I was, me and one other American were the only imports on the team. There might have been one or two other women, but then the rest were, you know, 18 or younger. So now, you know, the club is still focused a lot on bringing up young talent and stuff like that. But I think because the league has gotten so much stronger, which I think is great for the country and it's great for our club in the sense that the young kids get to be around women that have either played in the States or played in other countries and just get that experience and knowledge from them. So, yeah, it's great. So last year we were able to win the league as well and win in the playoffs. So, it's been like a 360 transformation from being what the club was when I first got here to what it is now. So,
when you can,
it's
run
great to just be a part of that too.
When you can run the table like you've done, obviously that we're not quite done yet, but you're pretty close. But is there sort of a special chemistry there that you get when you can? Because obviously during this winning streak, you've been challenged in certain games. Some games have been easy, but there's nights and days when you've been challenged. Yeah. How difficult is that mentally to get to a point where you have won the league without losing a single game in the league?
Yeah. I mean, if we are able to complete the perfect season, I think that would just be, it would just be great for Seven Oaks Suns, just being able to show the consistency from the start of the season in September all the way to the end of the season, which will be at the end of this month. So I think if we can complete the perfect season, that'll be great. Do we try to focus on it? Not so much, because I think that it just kind of adds that extra amount of pressure to us, where, as you know, as a team, we try to just focus a game at a time. So like you said, we have been challenged by some teams as of late, especially being Barking Abbey and, you know, playing Sheffield this past weekend, we were challenged. But I think it's also important for us to get those games in as well, especially with playoffs approaching, because it's not like the BBL where you have the aggregate score where you get home and away. It's just one single game. So I think it's important for us to get those challenging type games in, because you never know what can happen in the playoffs.
In saying that, I mean, your last two games, you got Caledonia this weekend. You'd expect to win that. Last game at Nottingham Wildcats, or against Nottingham Wildcats at home. Obviously, a tougher challenge then, thinking ahead to the playoffs. But, is that this little challenge that you guys will set yourselves over these last 2 weeks of the regular season?
Yeah, you know, I think we will. I think we're just... we always want to win. I mean, that's always the end goal. And, you know, challenging ourselves to be better, especially if we know that we're playing like a weaker opponent or something like that, like trying to, you know, set little goals for ourselves, like how many points we might want to give up, or, you know, how many O boards we might want to get, or, you know, getting so many people in double figures per game. And I think that it's important too for each of us to individually set like some mental goals for ourselves. So, you know, it's just always looking to get better. So I think that with these last two games, yeah, that will be our like little mini challenge before the playoffs come, is just, you know, getting these last two wins under our belts, and which will in turn turn into that perfect season, which will be, that would be great for us to be able to accomplish that.
You grew up in New Jersey, and it's a place that's got such a tradition of high school basketball. People talk as well as collegiate basketball as well. I'm going to let you pronounce the name of the town you grew up in.
I grew up in Bedminster, New Jersey.
I would not have pronounced it that way, so that's good. I'm glad I did that. I mean, what's it like to grow up? Because obviously you're close to New York. You it's the glamour of that, but it's a very competitive basketball environment. What was that like for you in terms of forming the way that you play the game and the level you've been able to reach?
Yeah. New Jersey, yeah, like you said, it's really close to New York. It's just in that area where it's a crazy populated state. And basketball is loved there in that state. So yeah, there's a lot of competition. So, you know, growing up there, I grew up in Bedminster, but I actually went to a high school. There was like a couple towns together that went to the same high school called Bernards High School. So it's more of like a uppity area where people are pretty well off. And, you know, that's the high school that I went to. And in New Jersey, they divide up the high schools by the size of their school. So when I first went to high school, we were group one, which is the smallest high school that you can go to. And then by the time I graduated, we had moved up to group two, which is obviously the second. It goes all the way up to group four. But yeah, it was just a interesting way to grow up, because when I got into my freshman year, I ended up playing varsity. And then I played varsity throughout, and maybe like midway through, I was thinking about transferring and going to another high school that was maybe 20 minutes from my house. It was in the town that my dad worked in. It was a Catholic school that was very, very well known for their basketball. And I ended up deciding not to go. And I'll never forget my brother telling me that I shouldn't go. He said, you should just stay at Bernard's, because then you could set records and you can do all these things, and, you know, you'll still be able to get good looks and do stuff like that. So I decided not to go. And I think it was a good decision for me, because I think I brought a lot of recognition to our high school, and just being able to accomplish some things that if I had gone somewhere else or done something different, it could have ended out different. It could have played out differently.
What's that feeling now, I guess, at some time when you, in the off season, if you're back home, that you'll occasionally pop your head around the door or something like that? Do you get that sort of feeling of accomplishment and maybe even recognition? I mean, I don't know, what do they have in the school that commemorates you? Is there anything there?
Yeah. So actually, my parents have lived in the house that I grew up in. I lived there my whole life. And then my parents actually just recently moved down to North Carolina because that's where my dad is originally from. So, you know, when I go home in the summer and I would visit my parents, I would always go back to my high school, check it out. So, yeah, they have like banners in our gyms. And then I was a 2000 point scorer. So they have a ball in a, you know, in their trophy thing for me and stuff like that. I got inducted into our high school Hall of Fame 2 years ago. So they have a bunch of stuff there. And so I always like to go back there and see some of my old teachers and like pay my respects, because those people obviously helped me get through high school and accomplish the things that I was able to accomplish. So maybe not so much now, because since my parents have moved from there, and I don't think I'll really settle down in New Jersey, but I'm sure I'll be back there.
And when you go into the Hall of Fame, is there a ceremony or what's that consist of?
Yeah, it was a ceremony. So I actually had to leave. It was during October 2 years ago. So I was already here. So I had to go home for the weekend, but it was really nice. I got inducted in with some of the girls that I actually was in the same year as me that were pretty well-known tennis players and, you know, some other people throughout. But it was really nice. I was able to bring my parents and like a couple of my high school friends that I'm still really close with that played a part in that, as well as a couple college teammates were able to come too. So it was actually a really nice ceremony.
Let's talk about family life, because you've talked about the fact you grew up in a mixed race home, and I guess here in the UK we don't always understand the nuances of what that means in America. We just sort of see, if you pardon the pun, the black and white sort of divisions in within the States. But what was that like for you?
Yeah, so my dad is black and my mom is white, and we grew up in a predominantly white area. So I think I struggled with that a little bit throughout high school, but it wasn't too bad. So I think people just always try to looked at me as like the athletic one or whatever the case may be. But I think then as I went to college, I kind of got to see that, different side of being able to connect with my African-American side, because I went to school in Philadelphia and I was able to, you know, when I grew up in, at Bernard's, I only had like one of my best friends still to this day, Nikkel. She was maybe the only other, and she was mixed race too, only other black kid on the team I was on. But then when I went to school, it was like, when I went to university in Philadelphia, it was like half white, half black. So I think that transition was really good for me. So growing up in that area where it was like predominantly white, I think sometimes was a little bit tougher for me and my friends sometimes. But then as I went to college and was able to experience that more of a diverse team, it was good for me. So I wouldn't say that my upbringing was anything crazy, or, you know, I struggled with my identity. It was just something that was like noticed, and I realized it more so when I got to university, like looking back.
Does athletics and playing sport help with that? Because obviously teenage years are so awkward, and most of the time I remember you don't want to be noticed, you don't want to stand out, you don't want people looking at you in any way. But how did sort of sport maybe sort of ease that path a bit for you, or did it ease that path?
Oh yeah, of course, because I just grew up playing sports all the time. I have a older brother that's 3 years older than me, and he was really good at athletics too. So, you know, like the things that he would do, I would do. And I wouldn't say that I was the smartest kid at the school. So I think athletics, being good at sports, helped me, you know, just develop as a teenager, and just realizing the things that I'm good at. And then when you put like hard work and effort and you're committed to being better, it just goes to show, like, because I wouldn't say that I'm like the most athletic person, but I just put a lot of time and effort into developing my basketball skills. And I played soccer throughout high school too. So, or should I say football?
Oh, you have to say football here.
British podcast. But yeah, so yeah, I mean, athletics definitely, I think, bridged that gap, and probably definitely helped me in my social life as well too, just because athletics brings people from all sorts of backgrounds together, and they're able to connect over the one common love for that sport. So I think that, yeah, being good at sports and being able to connect with people from different backgrounds and different classes and all that stuff was good for me in high school for sure.
I mean, obviously, the greater New York, New Jersey metropolis is one of the most diverse, and, you know, it's the melting pot of America, and has been for centuries. But does it give you a, I don't know if the word politically is the right word, but does it give you a different societal perspective when you kind of straddle both sides of the fence and you can see the issues that are there in different perspectives?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. I think... and I'm sure, you know, everyone over here is aware of the problems that we have in America when it comes to race. So, yeah, I think I'm able to see, you know, because of how my, not necessarily just because I'm mixed, I can see, but just because how my parents have raised me, to understand, to be fair to people. And, you know, you don't judge people based on the color of their skin. Or you don't, classify someone a certain way because of the color of their skin. So, I mean, I'm not sure if it's necessarily because I'm mixed that I'm able to whatever, but I think it's more so just about how my parents raised me and, you know, being confident and strong in the person that I am, and being of an African-American and a Caucasian woman. I mean, I always joke and say, it's like the best of both worlds, being able to be, you know, like that, and just being able to see the ways that played a part in my life growing up. And even, like, you know, still to this day, but it's just, I think it more reflects on how my parents raised me when I look at race and stuff like that.
Is it unusual when you come here? And I say this as someone who's married to an American, so I've seen some of this in action. Was it strange when people come over here and they hear you American, and it's almost people have one image perhaps of you, and that some people just don't have that nuance? There's different parts of the states and different cultures and different parts of the states that here it's almost that sometimes people see Americans as one single thing, and possibly that's not always good.
Yeah, that's definitely, I mean, one of the things that I realized when I first got here is people say, where are you from? And I say, I'm from the States. And they say, like, no, where are you from? And then I'll be more specific, like, oh, I'm from New Jersey. And then they'll be like, no, like, where are you from? Like, it's not, like, I'm not American, because they can tell that I'm of a mix. So they want to know. And I just realized that a lot of people here, either, you know, they're European, or they're from the Caribbean, or they're from Africa, or they're, and, you know, they know where their roots are from. But being an American, and my parents' roots go back to being in America, you know, for so many generations after generations. I think I struggled, but I just thought it was different that people were just like, they just couldn't really understand how, when I say, like, I'm American, they're just like, no, you're not. But yeah, I do think people have a misconception sometimes of America. I mean, I know what the media and news portrays of us sometimes, so... Yeah, I think we get put in a box sometimes, but
Does that put a responsibility in you to fight back on these things when you hear this misconception or someone trotting something out to you? Do you go, actually, not true? You're as the president would say, fake news.
Yeah, it's a lot of fake news, and people always say Americans are crazy or blah blah blah. And I think that, you know, no matter where you go, you're gonna have people that are doing outlandish stuff that gets in the news and doing stuff like that. It's just America's a bigger country, and that, like you said, it's the melting pot, and everyone goes to America to, you know, they dream of going to America to go to school or to work or to do whatever. So I think just because America is labeled as that, they get the good and the bad. So they get the good of being like, yeah, that's where the land of opportunity and everybody wants to go. But then they get the bad of people are crazy, and the gun violence and the race problems and all those things. But, you know, I still love where I'm from. So
do you see yourself, I mean, obviously you've been over here a while now. I mean, do you see yourself staying here or going back to the States, given the chance?
Yeah. I mean, when I'm done playing and done exploring my different options here, then I'll definitely go back to the States. That's definitely where I want to settle, get married, have kids, do all that shebang is definitely, I think, in the States. So I'll definitely be back there.
We'll keep you here for a little while longer and then set you free. Let's talk about college, because you're pretty unusual in the sense that you went to a Division II school, Holy Family, and it's a Catholic private school in Philadelphia, as I understand mm-hmm. that. And obviously, purely from a work permit view, it's difficult for D2 players to come overseas, but it's from a being noticed and getting recruited by pro teams overseas, very difficult. What led someone like you, who I would say had Division I talent, how do you end up there?
Yeah, I mean, it was just, nowadays when you look at how kids go about being recruited, they announce, you know, as soon as they get an offer from a university. Like when I was in high school, it wasn't like that. It wasn't like people announced when they got offers, or if, you know, I don't even really remember people verbally committing or, you know, committing early. It was kind of like people waited until their senior year of high school until they made their decision about where they were going to go. And I think nowadays people are just so much more aware of, like, you know, when you can talk to coaches and when you can take visits and you can do all these things. And I think when I was in high school, and it might have been because of like the area that I grew up in, or, you know, just the type of AAU team I was on, that I didn't have all that knowledge of, like, I knew you could go on official visits and I know you had a certain number, but like, I just wasn't aware of all the ins and outs of the recruiting process. So by the time I got to my senior year, I had a couple lower division one schools looking at me. And then I think within like a month, they all just were like, yeah, we filled your spot. Sorry. We filled your spot. Sorry. And I basically had to start from ground zero within my senior year, which was really, that was a stressful time for me, because I knew I wanted to get, a full scholarship to, you know, not put that weight on my parents. And, you know, I didn't personally want to be in debt coming out of university, and I knew I was talented enough to get a full ride. So, you know, that was my focus. And then lo and behold, this Division II school came around and they offered me a full scholarship. And I was like, you know what, this is my best bet right now. They're crazy successful. And, you know, I think back then, I'm not sure it was as much as it is now, especially being here too. I see a lot of kids being like, I want to go Division I. I want to go Division I. I want to go Division I. And I ask them, do you think you'll play? Are you willing to sacrifice 2 or 3 years of not playing and then possibly playing? Are you willing to sacrifice sitting on the bench the entire time? You know what I mean? There's all these ins and outs of going, yeah, I want to go Division I want to go Division I. But people get so wrapped up in Division I and they want a full scholarship. And I think that they sometimes lose sight that Division II can offer you the same type of scholarship opportunities and being able to play. So when I was offered D2, I think I was a little bit disappointed at first, but then I realized, you know, if this is the way it's supposed to be and if this is how my life is supposed to pan out, then I'm okay with it. So I went there and I ended up having a really good 4 years there. We were successful. So I think it's just nowadays people get so wrapped up in the idea of going Division I, and that if you want to play overseas or you want to get to the pros or you want to do X, Y, and Z after, you need to go Division I. But the reality is that it's not necessary.
I mean, people see the kind of glamour of the title game, the championship game in the NCAA last Sunday night. And obviously that's the big time at the top end. And you've got players there who are looking obviously to do well there, but looking to play pro, maybe play, you know, for their national team or whatever. But you, when you get down the bottom, you mentioned it there, that opportunity you get for a full ride scholarship, particularly in the States, because the numbers for a collegiate degree in America are absolutely mind-blowing compared to here.
So
do you sort of feel that that's a pressure that people don't talk about enough, is the financial side of the benefit of that, of getting a full ride?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think some people are just, they'll be quite frank about it and be like, yeah, I need to get a full ride because, one, my parents won't be able to afford it, and two, I don't want to be in debt when I get out of school. So I think that, you know, some people are more willing to speak about the idea, you know, the fact that they need to get a full ride. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's also other people that actually don't even need a full ride. They're more than capable of paying or willing to, you know, do the loans and all the things that are required to go to school in the States, like you said, because it's crazy, just crazy expensive. So, but, you know, I do think a lot of kids would just be like, yeah, I want to get a full ride, especially for women, at least, because we know some, like, how the men's side can work and how they can go to school for a year and then just go into the NBA. So,
I mean, you mentioned AAU. I mean, it's that system's so obvious here when we talk about boys' basketball or young men's basketball, and everyone reads it, kind of the pitfalls and the sort of underhand recruiting and the traveling teams and stuff. What's it like for women? Because we don't really see that as much in this side of the pond.
Yeah, I mean, AAU has grown so much because when I played for like a little team that was just like a couple of some girls that I played with in the same high school conference. We got together and played for my friend's dad. Now they have, I think it's just because of the area that I grew up into, but I know that they have, like, you know, NBA players sponsored certain AAU teams. But I think the women's side is as big as men's too. Like, that's where all the recruiting happens. The tournaments are crazy now. Like, Nike hosts the tournaments. I coached an AAU team maybe a couple years, 2 or 3 years ago. I coached, we would go to Chicago, Washington, D.C. They travel all over the place to do these tournaments. So they're not usually paired with the men's, but they're just as big, just, you know, trying to get all your name out there, and the amount of coaches that show up to these, the amount of money that they probably make off these tournaments too is crazy.
Is that coaching stint in AAU a sign of future aspirations?
Yeah, I think when I'm done playing, I would like to get into coaching, definitely in the collegiate level though. I mean, I have dabbled in coaching 18 and younger. That's what my AAU team was, but I think I'd rather be with kids that are focused and this is definitely what they want to do, and that's why I think university level would be best for me. That's what I would like to get into once I'm done playing.
Being over here, you get to obviously travel around the UK, see different places, and obviously this weekend you'll be in Edinburgh, so I'm sure that'll be the highlight of your entire season. But I mean how much have you used this as staying in Sevenoaks and staying where you are as a kind of springboard to take these flights, cheap flights, to see the rest of Europe, see as much as you can when you're over the side of the Atlantic?
Yeah, I definitely do. I enjoy being here. I enjoy, you know, we live in Surrey, so we're not even actually in Sevenoaks. We live in Surrey. We're really close to London. I enjoy London. It reminds me a lot of Toronto, which is another city that I really enjoy. So, yeah, and it's just easy when you're here. You get to travel. You get to do... A couple weeks ago, I was in Switzerland for this school that I work with here for coaching. So we went to Switzerland. At the end of May, I'm going to go to Frankfurt. So yeah, it's nice. It's like how we go from state to state in America, but you end up staying in the same country. So you're like, this isn't really traveling. But here you're like, I get to go to a whole new country. And yeah, so.
But at least when you go to state in the States, the language is relatively simple here. You know, you hear suddenly it's just transformed within a couple of miles going from one border to another.
Yeah, England is definitely crazy with the accents.
It's true, actually. I mean, I guess it's the one thing that most Americans don't appreciate. And having spoken to many Americans about this, that if you go to between Surrey and Liverpool, or certainly to go even to Glasgow beyond that, it can seem like a different language.
Yeah, I want to say the last time I was in Scotland, did we fly? I think it might have been for the trophy final. We flew, so we had someone pick us up, and the bus driver was talking. He's speaking English, but I had no idea what he was even saying.
It can't have been from Edinburgh. We speak proper English in Edinburgh. Where's your favorite places that you visited on your travels?
I've been to Athens. I enjoyed that. I went to Croatia, to Dubrovnik. I really enjoyed that. Berlin was nice. Most of the places that I've gone to, I've enjoyed, just because they're just so much different than a lot of the places that you can go to in the States. So, at the end of this year, I'm going to go to Thailand. So that's not really in Europe, but
nice. Still nice.
Halfway there. So I figured
hop on a plane and go. How much do you kind of record this? I mean, do you do a bit of journal, you know, keep a journal of all these, you know, travels and experiences that you have?
Yeah, I do. I try to journal. Sometimes I go through stints where I'll journal every day, and then other times I'll go through, you know, like maybe once a week, or, you know, sometimes I do fall off and maybe only once a month. But yeah, I try to write down a lot of the things that I go through, or my journaling kind of goes hand in hand with the books that I read. I read a lot of like self-help books, and I try to reflect a lot within my journal about some of the stuff that I've read. So I do. I try to jot down as much as I can.
Why the self-help books? Is there something there that you just, is that just an obsession to detail of improvement, or where does that come from?
Yeah, I think it is just, you know, definitely with improving as a person and just being a better person in general. And just, you know, if we don't spend time getting to know ourselves or figuring out ourselves or enjoying ourselves and being by ourselves alone, I think, you know, it's hard to kind of reflect that out to the public. So, yeah, I started this journey maybe 5 years ago, just like, you know, dabbling in self-help books. And, you know, they can go from anything to like a Buddhist book, to a Christian book, to how to be better with money book, to all sorts of things. So it's not a specific genre that I'm staying in. It's just different ways that I can, you know, develop as a person. So
best piece of advice you've found recently?
Best piece of advice. Well, recently, right now I'm reading Becoming, Michelle Obama's book. And she talks about when she was younger, how someone had asked her what she wants to be when she grows up. And she realized, she said at the time, I don't remember, like a doctor, you know, one of those high, like doctor, architect, or, and she said when she got into being first lady and stuff, she realized that that question wasn't really appropriate to ask someone young, because then you put them in a box and they realize like, oh yeah, this is what I'm supposed to strive to be, and this is what I'm going to become and stay that. Whereas in life, you're always evolving and developing and realizing that your path is going to change. So you're always becoming. And I think that's why she calls her book Becoming, is because you're always going to be evolving and you don't need to be one thing in life. So I realized that. I think right now I'm labeled as a basketball player, but I would like to develop, you know, evolve and turn my life into maybe being a coach or a personal trainer, or just realizing that I don't have to just be one thing. I can be whatever I want to be, and that's okay to switch.
Is it important to think about that now? Because I guess athletes, and it's very much a misconception, but there is that sort of vision that, you know, you're out there, you're using your athleticism, whatever, as a career. People don't really think about your minds or what the potential is there. I mean, is it important to kind of step outside that box and remember that you're this other person that's not just throwing yourself around shooting a basketball or defending or working out or whatever?
Yeah, of course. I think maybe, you know, it used to be like basketball all the time, and just realizing now that, you know, there's so much more in life to, you know, explore and look into. And I think that's why a lot of times I do read and journal, is just, you know, keeping my mind interested and developing into other things that I might be interested along the way. And, you know, I think the beautiful thing about being about an athlete is you have a lot of free time to do things like that and to figure out other interests that you might have. Or so, you know, now it's like I do coaching on the side along with it. But yeah, it's still, being an athlete is still like a major part of my life. And I don't think it'll ever leave, whether I'm playing or not. So.
End of the season coming. We'll finish up on this. You couple of weeks, finish off the league season, then it's playoff time. I suppose we should call it the Benicos playoffs, as we're supposed to call it now. But I mean, you got the chance to finish off the season on a high, and obviously you guys won the playoffs last year. Does it just put that more of an incentive on you to keep what you got before?
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. I think that's why the cup final and the trophy loss for us this year were really hard for us because I think we know what we're capable of. But then I always have to remind myself, like, that's the beauty of basketball, is it's one game. These are one game scenarios, and you don't know, you can't always put the ball in the basket, unfortunately. Sometimes it just doesn't go in. So, yeah, I think that, you know, since we have won the past 2 years, the league will be this is the second league and we won the championship. Yeah, obviously we want to do it again. We want to continue to win. And I think there is a little bit of an added pressure of knowing that you've done it before, but I think we're willing to work to keep it. So
much of it's an incentive to play somewhere like the O2 Arena, which, you know, we've seen NBA games there, but, you know, we've seen great artists play there night after night. You know, is that kind of cool place to end up your season?
Yeah, that place. Yeah, the O2 is, it's a great atmosphere. Anytime you make it to one of the cup final was a great atmosphere when we played 2 years ago, the trophy final when we won that in Glasgow. That was a great atmosphere. When you get to those finals game, the atmosphere is so much different compared to like our home gym playing at Seven Oaks. Yeah, just a little bigger, a little bit more people, more seats, you know, bigger scoreboards. Yeah, it's a great feeling to just get there and be there and experience what you're doing and where you're at and who you're with. So,
well, we wish you all the very best for completing the perfect season. It's within touching distance. I'm sure you'd love to get it, but also for the WBBL playoffs at Katkar. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate your time and hope the rest of the season goes well.
Great. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for another edition of the MVP Cast. Every edition available to download via your preferred podcast provider. You can check out previous editions via our website. Just head to mvp247.com. We'll also get all the latest news from the world of British basketball. A new MVP Cast coming very soon. But for me, Mark Woods, it's bye for now.